Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you so much for being here today. Listen, I think we have a great show today. We're going to be discussing Nancy Guthrie, who disappeared on February 1st. Essentially, she didn't show up for her local group that met to watch church together. And she was reported missing. Her daughter, Annie, who is her oldest daughter, as well as her husband of 20 years, Tommaso Sione, who live only about 4 miles away and have always been her caretaker. They're the ones that are still in the region and location and live so close to her, as opposed to Savannah, who is in New York, and her brother, Cameron, who is up in Vermont. Primary caretakers. They had another dinner planned. They had a meal on Saturday night, played Mahjong, and then she was delivered back to the house by Tommaso that evening at about between 9 and 10 that night. So in any event, when she didn't show up the next day for her her church gathering at a private home, she was reported missing. And again, the first to report to try to determine what happened were Annie and Tommaso. We know from interviews with Savannah Guthrie that they all assumed that because both of the back doors were open, that she was taken out by emergency personnel. You know how the stretchers are large and, you know, breaching or getting into the front door if somebody's having an emergency. For instance, with the pacemaker, if it was recorded that there were issues and they responded there to take her out, she might not have, if she didn't have consciousness, if nobody reviewed who should call, because that would be difficult unless she has a wristband on or something like that. Obviously, there would be information maintained by the doctor's office via that pacemaker, but family just believed very emphatically initially that she was likely taken by medical personnel and just wasn't able to reach out to anybody to let her know what had happened. So even though, believe it or not, this case was treated as a walk away, if you will, it's really, at least according to Savannah, was rather that she was likely taken by personnel and emergency personnel and just wasn't physically capable of contacting the appropriate family members. After that, of course, they were calling all the regional hospitals, different ambulatory services could have possibly responded, reaching out and trying to figure out what in the world happened to their mom. So there was this hiatus of time, and then ultimately Pima County was contacted. I want to go, though, over some of the new information, just updated information on kind of what's happening. Do we know new information concerning specifically the facts and details? No, we don't have any breaking news on the DNA. We don't have any breaking news on the videos that they're reviewing. no breaking video on somebody coming forward and saying, I know who Porch Guy is. So we don't have any breaking news in that way. But there's a lot going on in the news right now regarding Nancy Guthrie. So I want to go over all these details so that you have a one-stop shop sort of to get not the hype, not the, drama of it all, but let's look at what is actually going on. So number one, I want to talk about something that we talked about, and I know I have the mods looking at it. I don't know if you all were on our session when we talked about, it seems like it's been over a week ago, certainly, that we spoke about the possibility that Porch Guy could be dead, right? We spoke about it on this show. I proposed that because anytime if somebody else is involved in this crime, which I still believe that this isn't just one person. And let me tell you the facts again that lead me to believe that. I work on facts. I work on Occam's razor. I see an antenna sticking out of his pocket. I know I've shown that picture multiple times. On top of that, if you look at the fact that on these stills, he looks to the right, or I'm sorry, to the left. I know we've talked about that before many times, very early on especially. So if you look at all of that, it just leads me to believe that there is somebody else involved. Also think in terms of just handling and manipulating and being responsible for Nancy Guthrie as a kidnapper, you really need a secondhand man. So could it be possible that judging from the silence of the whole situation, yes, that Porch Guy was exterminated by whoever else was involved in this. And again, that's something we talked about. I don't know the exact date, but seems like at least a week ago on the show, because it's something that occurred to me as an investigator. It's something that you see whenever you have conspirators involved, particularly in a violent situation like this, that could be the situation. So I was actually really happy when some people DM'd me and said, hey, listen, a lot of the profilers that have been recently interviewed supported that conclusion. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. I always like that. I wanted to describe a little bit the relationship between an investigator and a person who works in the area of behavioral analysis. I want to make it clear that in the FBI, you don't have behavioral analysis typically, if ever, out in the field. What behavioral analysis are, they are at Quantico. They have this whole little area in the gerbil cage of Quantico, where their offices are, and they're a think tank, and they work with CIRG, which is our critical incident response group. And so you have, if you will, you have sort of the SWAT contingent, you have the hostage rescue contingent there, and then you have the behavioral analysis unit, and the behavioral analysis unit is divided into units. There's a unit that deals with the behavioral analysis when you see it in the digital format, right? To do with cyber type crimes. And they can be violent too. In other words, threats and things like of that nature. And you have a whole BAU that studies that. And then you have BAU that studies these types, serial killings, mass killings. And then you have people that study things like kidnappings and abductions. And they have this whole library of information of people they've interviewed. We know as we speak that Rex Heurman, right? He's being interviewed because they want to add that to the library. How does an architect, you know, a guy that's living a completely double life, 1 minute Dr. Jekyll and 1 minute the nefarious Mr. Hyde, how does this happen? How do they compartmentalize? Is it just, and it is, their insatiable urge to feel sexually gratified? That's the only way they can do it, is by their dominance over another. And it's not just about sex, obviously. It's power, it's control. But when you have a case, and I've talked to you about the cases I've worked side by side with BAU, again, They don't fly out. They don't come out. What you do as a case agent is you're working with the body of evidence, the body of evidence that you're looking at. And you're saying, listen, based on this body of evidence, work with me on what you see. What you see based on the library of other perpetrators who have done similar crimes. That's how it works. And you work together. And then if something doesn't comport with what the BAU specialist agent that you're working with, if, for instance, they say, and I've had this happen, first of all, I want to say, in my experience, and I know this isn't the experience of every FBI agent, personally, in my experience, every case that I have called on BAU to help me with, and there have been multiple cases, I know I've discussed several here, in these cases, for me, they've been spot on with in terms of race, in terms of age, in terms of sex, in terms of motive, in terms of background, such as what kind of job they had, blue collar, white collar, unemployed, in terms of, again, race, where are they from, based on some of their, what they do, what backpacks they have on, what, how they move, maybe their facial features combined in there. So anyway, I've had a lot of success working hand in hand, but it's a real hand in hand process between the case agent and the behavioral analyst, because they're not out in the field. They're not looking at it. You're giving them what you would like to have analyzed. So it's a really cool relationship. So I thought it was so interesting when we posed all of this quite some time ago, right here on the show, and then to see the specialists, at least some of them that were interviewed, comport with exactly what I suggested. And the only reason I bring that up is just to say, first of all, it might not even be true. I mean, Porch Guy could be alive. Porch Guy could have been acting completely on his own. Let's consider he could be completely on his own and he doesn't have anybody to silence. There's nobody that needs silence because there's truly no conspiracy. That's what Mac thinks, Cheryl McCollum, who I have a lot of respect for. Mostly though, I think your talking heads and your people with investigative experience, again, how many people have investigative experience working actual kidnappings? That's the question. You need to ask, but nevertheless, it's very interesting when, if you make an assessment or an assertion and then the profiling unit comports with that. About half the time I had a assessment that was right in the real life cases, and half the time I had one that was wrong. I submitted, I believe, 3 to the behavioral analysis unit. 2 I was right on, and 1, so maybe a little bit better. 1 I was completely wrong on what type of profile I was looking for, and the BAU was completely right. And when I say that, I'm talking about demographics, not about whether somebody killed somebody or not. And again, to be quite fair, or not fair, to be quite candid, I don't know. No behavioral profiler knows. What we're judging this on is the fact that they have kept a $1.2 million secret. And so we're just saying, at least what I'm saying, and I want to make it clear, and I made this clear before when I pointed it out, because I thought, oh, this is a pretty strong thing to say, but that it is a possibility. It is a possibility. Truly, truly is. So I wanted to touch on that because I saw, grab my glasses, I saw people sort of talking about that recently, or talking about that, which was interesting that people were bringing up what we talked about right here, days, a week ago. I don't know. They're looking that up. Number 2, I want to talk a lot about the search. I had to look back and get the exact day all search efforts were stopped. It was after 48 hours. It was within 48 hours, actually, for Pima County search efforts to cease and desist. 48 hours, everyone. I kept saying 2 days, 48 hours from the crime. So within 2 days, just. And I want to give you the reasons that he cited, Sheriff Nanos. He cited number one, he said, safety to our investigators. And number two, no actionable leads. Okay, this is not a bash Sheriff Nanos segment. It's mind-boggling to me as an investigator, unless, and I gave them every benefit of the doubt, unless they knew what happened to her. It's pretty mind-boggling, don't you think, that they would say, you got to search. It's the Sonora Desert she's in, a perfect place, as we pointed out. 4,000 bodies have been found there. This is Fox. Did this video. I love this video. Look at this place. Cheryl McCollum talked about it. She went out there. She said that dirt is hard pan, what we call hard pan, those country bumpkins that are out there with me. I'm a country girl raised on a farm. This is hard pan where you can't dig. You can't. It's too hard without electrical, devices or without a backhoe or something like that. You mechanically, like with a shovel, would be almost impossible. But as she pointed out, and as you can all see here, you don't need a shovel. You can go hide a body underneath this brush. They're never going to be found. It's hundreds of acres of vast wilderness, of harsh conditions, of wildlife that would take any sort of body and annihilate it. That's just the facts. After a very short amount of time, they would forage, it would be gone, I can assure you, other than, bones. Some bone structures, teeth would be scattered. This is so vast, everyone. So to think after 48 hours that you conducted a proper search, saying that they did search, and I understand they searched for many hours, and I understand CBP had their dogs out, but there's all kinds of dogs. My understanding is they had scent dogs out, which is really good. That's how they track, tracking dogs, scent dogs that work on a scent. And I'm not going to say it's my understanding. I know it's to be true because they had a piece of Nancy's clothing, which they then discarded on her front bush when they were done with their search. And so they did have some scent dogs out there. How many dogs do you think it would take to search this area? This is in and around her place. I'm going to tell you, it would take dozens and dozens and dozens. It's a vast, vast area. I've talked about other cases like Brian Laundrie, when you had millions and millions of dollars of resources, personnel, assets, and no one found him. The only people that found him were his parents that knew exactly where he was. That's why they found him. Walked straight to the spot, which was about 20 minutes to half an hour walk in. They knew right where he was and they got him right away. If you look at Travis Decker, who murdered his three little girls, suffocated them, it took months to find him. And only on kind of their last search, the U.S. Marshals and other entities said, let's just start all over, let's research. And they found him within a mile of where the murders took place. But months later. So very difficult to tell how he died or what happened. But it's so impossible. You have to literally stand at an arm's length between individuals and go through this. So that means if there's a ravine, if there's a huge rock formation, if there's a cacti, if there's this shrubbery, you got to go around it. So you're not searching it. You break away, you go around it, you try to look back, but you can't walk through it. And that's exactly where you would hide a body. So unfortunately, there's so much missed, but the fact that this was called off in 48 hours when people like Madres Buscadoras were there on scene very early, when you have the Cajun Navy saying, listen, we have a, you know, an operations plan, dozens of pages long. We have dogs that are at our disposal, drones. We have all this equipment. You don't have to put yourselves out. We understand that you're investigating other cases, Pima County. Let us look. And that was kiboshed. I know we've talked about it before. Why is it new? It's new because when you look at what happened with the Bureau, that now we know it was day four before they were officially let into the investigation, meaning they were allowed to open an opening a case. They were allowed to use their resources and go full-fledged. You know, when you look at the fact that he said they had an FBI agent, I think initially, and then I think he's backed off that, whatever. He basically says an FBI person. Let's just leave it at that. And you know, you find out it's a TFO, everyone. A TFO is a task force officer that is, in this case, a sheriff's officer, that they're detached to the FBI to work as a task force officer. They're sworn. They work right alongside the FBI. There are certain limitations, but they're certainly open, armed into FBI task force community. And you work side by side with FBI agents. With a lot of the same authority, in a sense, that goes to them, but they're not an FBI agent. So I thought when he, you know, I thought he was very tricky in how he put forth his response to when Kash Patel said we weren't invited into day four, and you know he retorted back. But nevertheless, the reason that this is all coming together for me is, and for many of you. 48 hours, no more searches. So now there's no more searches. Don't have the FBI searching. I know we saw limited searching days later around her property. I don't know what they were looking for. Like I said, whenever I've seen searches like that, which wasn't a grid search where you have three or four ERT, they had ERT on their shirts go out. They're actually just looking for something very specific. It might not even be evidentiary. Maybe they've been told that there's another cistern or that there's a manhole or something like that. That's what it looked like to me. I don't know if you remember that footage when they came out. They had actually black gloves hanging from their back pockets. We know 16 gloves were found. I'm sure some of them will end up going back to law enforcement in some shape or form. But nevertheless, when you look at that, and then another thing that always never made any sense to me was keeping the whole Mexico discussion out. And I posted here and on Twitter where the Mexican authorities said, listen, we were never contacted. Now, Mexican authorities aren't exactly perfectly responsible or reliable, I should say, either one. But I mean, come on, look at how close they live to the border. How in the world is it that that isn't a huge consideration? Especially when you haven't even searched. The only thing I can make of it is that they have a very strong premise as to what happened, and it doesn't involve Mexico, and it doesn't involve disposing of her somewhere in the Sonora Desert to disallow searches. You don't have to have, again, what he said, we don't have actionable leads to search. Your actionable leads are you have a missing woman. That's your actionable lead. Dangerous? Of course, all these searches are dangerous. Law enforcement is dangerous. Search and rescue are adept at doing these searches. They know about the dangers of dehydration, about the dangers of wildlife, plant life, and they embrace it. So it's mind-boggling to me. My mind is truly boggled that 48 hours, no searches. That will forever be a huge mistake in this case, because many individuals who take individuals, kill individuals, or the person dies, they get rid of them in close proximity. They also could have easily, an hour away or so, hour and a half, go to Mexico. There's no entry issues. You just have her in the trunk and you drive right through. The Mexican authorities love to have Americans in Mexico spending money. It's easy for all of you who have done it. Most of us have done it. It's piece of cake. Just drive through. A whole different deal coming back, but driving through is nothing. So how I understand the vastness, and I'll show this again, that this would be a daunting task if you don't have specific information as to where she would have been there. That's what search parties do. That's what dogs, that's what EcuSearch, that's what Madre Buscadoras, that's what, what's the other one? The Cajun Navy, that's what they do. So I'll never understand that 48 hour. And the reason, as I said, that I bring it up is because when you look at this fact pattern, no searchers, no FBI, no looking at, no contacting Mexican authorities, if you believe the Mexican authorities, maybe they've been contacted now, but I have their statement that they issued and I've posted it before here. I've talked about it. When you look at that fact pattern, you just have to say, what in the hell was going on that you would not want to use all of these resources? Why? Quash it. Why?
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right. Let me take a look at this. Hi, Arizona gal. Hello and happy Friday. Sending love from Tucson. Thank you, Jen, and this wonderful YouTube community family. A little piece of home in this crazy world. Yes. Yes, definitely. Love the community, love everybody that we have on here. Thank you so much for coming in this morning. I know I gave a late issue. I was out of town. I was kind of unsure when I would be back, but I wanted to make sure to do a show and to talk about all of this that's churning in the media right now. It's churning. They don't have anything else to churn about, so they're going to churn about things like this, but it's such a true consideration. I mean, Kash Patel talked about it. So let me go on to what else is being discussed. We've discussed 2 of those. I want to go on really quickly to Nanos. 2 board of supervisors, and I want to call it what it is. It's the Pima County Board of Supervisors have come out. One is Matt Hines and one is Steve Christie. And they have come out and they said they're going to move for the removal of Sheriff Nanos. Now, I had to do a little bit of research into this because it's very interesting. There is actually a law on the books, and I'm going to read it to you. The law on the books is this. And this is, I'm going to start from the beginning. The law states, it's, and you can look it up, it's Arizona Revised Statute 11253. The Board of Supervisors, and that's who we've been talking about, has the authority to require any county officer to provide a report under oath regarding their duties. If the officer neglects or refuses to provide that report in 10 days, the board is legally permitted to remove them and declare the office vacant. Outside of that specific statutory refusal, the board generally lacks the power to fire an elected sheriff, as the position is ultimately accountable to the voters through elections or formal recall process. Currently, supervisors have been using that statute of course, to try to get rid of nanos. So this is critical. And I talked about this before, and the voting, there's five members. They would have to have a majority. So at least three members. There's two that are already locked in and say they want them out. So now they would have to get one more. But even if that happened, I think this is the issue. That statute specifically says it's only if he doesn't answer. And if you'll recall, there was a 22-page report, I believe, that he submitted. And he submitted it on time. They gave him the number of days. We kind of counted it down. He did it. And then on News Nation, on Elizabeth Vargas, we heard Dr., and I want to say his name right, Dr. Matt Hines came on and said, listen, I'm not satisfied with what he gave us. So that's the loophole I think they're using. So the statute says you have to, you are required to provide information to us within 10 days. And if the person, the sheriff, does not do that, the elected official does not do that, then they can, because they broke the statute. I mean, by a member vote. Five members, three or more, if they say, I mean, some of them might vote, hey, they missed it, they were sick, they had a death in the family, whatever, let's give them a few more days. But basically, that's the teeth that this select or this board has, this supervisor board has, is in requiring Sheriff Nanos to provide answers to their questions, okay? They have been dissatisfied with what Sheriff Nano said. And in fact, again, they're going after him for both kind of perjury in his early years, ever getting in law enforcement based on his record as an El Paso officer when he purportedly beat somebody with his flashlight who was handcuffed within an inch of his life, being on disciplinary suspension from his duties eight times. All these things, you know, not reporting the right year. He actually left the department, so it looked like there wasn't a gap, right? So he basically said he was with the department. I think it was 2 years longer than he really was. Nevertheless, this is their case. And then they said, Sheriff Nanos, explain yourself. Sheriff Nanos explains himself, but at least two of these board members are dissatisfied with the explanation. So I think what they're going to try to do is burrow in on that statute. But that statute, to me, as I read it, it says if he doesn't comply. And he did comply. But to me, and I want to read you this verbiage again, it says outside of statutory refusal. Well, he didn't refuse any of it. They can require Sheriff Nanos, I'm just putting in Sheriff Nanos, it can be any elected official, to provide a report under oath regarding their duties. If the officer neglects or refuses to provide the report in 2 days, they're legally permitted. It doesn't mean required, they're permitted, okay? So this is what they're going for. We're going to hear what they end up deciding if they get three out of the five people. So they need one more person, basically. But then again, they're going to have their legal team has to look at this and say, is this really reaching outside of what the statute says? The statute says, listen, we supervise these elected officials and we can hold them responsible for bringing forth concerns, or they can bring forth concerns and hold the person responsible to answering. But it seems very clear to me in this statute that you can't remove him just based on the fact you don't like his answers. But I think that that's what they're going to try to do. Dr. Hines said on Elizabeth Vargas, he's very dissatisfied. He doesn't think he answered them. So will that be the avenue that's used to try to remove him? Of course, they're also talking about missteps in this case. And it's just been refueled by Kash Patel saying we weren't allowed in till day four. We had a plane standing by for DNA. And they wanted to send it to their lab as opposed to our lab. And, you know, other missteps. And I know one they're going to bring up is you can't stop a search in 48 hours unless they knew where she was. I totally understand it. If you know she's not in that desert, you have specific information on where she was taken, who took her, that she's there, and you don't want to waste the resources of all these amazing people when they could be working on another case, and you don't want to have to answer for it later. Oh, so Sheriff Danos, you knew from day two where she was, and you have all these search groups out searching in the Sonoran Desert, which is hard to do, which is can be a safety issue. That makes sense, but that isn't the facts that we seem to have here. That isn't the fact pattern. So I just don't know how he could explain that. And I am sure that, again, this is part of the supervisors that do have some teeth. Now, you might be asking, but why, if somebody is an elected official and they're either incompetent or not making reasonable decisions for whatever reason, which I think it's more ego than incompetence, personally. I think he thought, I really believe this. I don't think he's corrupt. I know many people think he's corrupt. And if you look at this fat pattern, I understand why you're saying that. Oh, keep the FBI, keep Mexico conversation out of it. Keep this out of it. Keep that out of it. Keep the searchers out of it. That you could build, or, you know, you could think, that seems like somebody's trying to cover something up. But really, I don't think it's about covering something up. I think it was about his ego saying, we're going to solve it. Our people are going to solve it. We don't need the FBI. We have cases like this that we think we're capable of solving, even though I showed you the statistical chart where they haven't even had a kidnapping in Pima County. They don't even have a grid chart for that. Well, now they do. They need to have one on there for, and I'm not talking about a parental kidnapping type case. I'm talking about a kidnap for ransom case. I looked right away. Now, if they've changed it, they've changed it. But I have that graphic where it's not even part of their stats because it doesn't happen. So without things like that happening, and they had very limited murders also, which is good. It's a safe place to live, right? A lot of retirees go there. The weather makes it conducive for different medical issues, but they just don't have the time behind the tiller. I'm not saying anything negative against their detectives because they have done a great job in terms of the cases they've had, clearing most of them, which is really good. But again, on this, we know somebody with 6 months experience was put on this case. That's always going to be scrutinized, always. Christine Camley, hi. Thanks, Jen, for the outstanding channel. You are the best. Thank you. Thank you so much. Did you see the interview yesterday with Brian Inton and Sergeant Aaron Cross? Aaron said the family initially told police that Nancy may have walked off. Yes. So, yes. You know, at the end of the day, the family did not know. And what comes to mind? So I can tell you from working missing persons cases, many, many missing persons cases on violent crime squads. When people go missing, typically they are found within 48 hours. They wander off. They are often children. They are often elderly people. And as a family member, that's what your mind goes to. It does. It doesn't go to anything nefarious. I draw the same analogy to Dylan Mortensen when she looks out and all this is happening and she thinks she sees like a masked guy and she thinks, this is incongruent. But she's under the influence. There's people in and out of that house all the time. She's scared, but the last thing Dylan Mortensen thought was, oh my God, all my besties were massacred in adjoining rooms. Your mind doesn't want to go there. Have you ever had a situation like that where you think something could be true and then you're like, nah, there's no way? That's what often happens even with these murder suspects, and their families are notified and they're like, there's no way. And then they start looking backwards and they're like, oh God, I do remember this or that, all these clues that in hindsight you can sort of identify as being sketchy. But when it's happening, you don't, your mind doesn't go there. So it doesn't surprise me at all that initially, well, it not only doesn't surprise me, we knew this, right? Savannah Guthrie discussed this. She said they thought, did she wander off? But she's so limited by the how far she could go, they quickly kind of disposed of that thought because they thought she physically is incapable of walking beyond to the mailbox. And even that was a challenge. You know, she's on a cane. She has severe back pain. She takes medication. She has a pacemaker. She has a heart ailment. But for those of you who have seen her on the Today Show, and at night, I always show these clips of that. If you want to kind of get into the inside of Nancy Guthrie, hear her speak, see her walk, see the interaction between her and Savannah and her and Annie, I do all these clips so you can kind of see that and feel that. So I knew that, basically that information that you're saying there, we knew it from Savannah, and we also knew it from law enforcement, right? That they initially responded. And I actually did a show on this, on how many people that are of this age group go missing that wander off. There, it's a huge amount. And there's a lot of men particularly that wander off to unfortunately take their lives, you know, for whatever reason. They have medical reasons, medical issue. If you look at the statistics, it's disproportionately that older men who are retired, who for whatever reason, whether they feel like they have nothing to live for, they've lost their purpose, they're struggling with health, they just feel horrible. It's a high demographic. So you have those kinds of people too, that literally just walk off and they have plans for basically kind of euthanizing themselves. I'm going to call it that. I personally know somebody right now who is struggling with ALS, and they have specifically moved to one of the states where they can practice that. It's legal in many states. I don't know if you know this, where you can actually have a doctor come in and put you to sleep. They just put the medication in you intravenously. You fall asleep and you never wake back up. That's legal in the United States, in certain states. And there are a lot of people, and this is one person, you know, that's, I think, their choice, because they're suffering. They can barely breathe. Every time they cough, they can't even clear their throat, actually. And that is what they feel like is the best way for them to deal with that. I know many of you are believers. I'm a believer, so I can't believe in that. I think whenever it's my time, but you know, I've never been in the shoes of these people. So they were working with statistics. So we knew this information at the very beginning, because Sheriff Nano says that at the beginning, we thought this, and then we realized pretty quickly it wasn't, right? He had a homicide detective come out quickly. And I mean, let's face it, guys, it's a clue when there's blood, when doors are open, and when the Nest camera is yanked off. Okay, that's just common sense wise. Any investigator with any salt should have shown up and said, she didn't walk away. This is way beyond that. But for Tommaso and Annie to initially, when they found out she didn't report, that would be the first thing I would think. The first thing I would think if I got the call that, hey, your mom didn't show up. My mom doesn't attend church with a private group, but my mom does things like pickleball, and she does things like cards, bridge. She's a writer, so she has a writing group. That's probably the best analysis. I'm just and I know you can draw from your experiences too. If the writing group called me and said, oh my gosh, your mom hasn't showed up, I would immediately think she decided to do something different. I would never think she was kidnapped in her home by a masked demon like porch guy and taken never to be seen again. That's the furthest thing I would think, furthest from my mind, everyone. And so from that perspective, it makes sense to me that we've known about this, right? They came out and said that. Savannah said it. They said, that's what we initially thought. She walked off. And then they realized, no, because after a quick search, you could determine no, because it's just like with a child. There's only so far, a 4, 5, 6-year-old child, there's only so far they can go. So you quickly realize that. And I want to tell you, and it's to a degree on my show too, there's a lot of rehashing of what we've known from the beginning. So we knew the family thought she walked off. Then we knew they thought that she possibly was taken from ambulance, by ambulance. So we're going to see everybody reporting on this case. You're going to see that. You're going to see rehashes. And because we every day report on it, we don't miss a day. And we report multiple times a day. If you look on the 5 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and 11 o'clock, and we've missed a little bit here because one of the main producers who works with me on that has had a very important, her mother has been hospitalized. And so we're behind on doing our late nights, but you know, we're still on board with everything, of course. Will this case ever be solved? Need more searches. Stack 6165, I really like this post, and thank you so much. It will be solved. I feel very confident in that. There's just too many people on it with the FBI, with the locals. There's too much manpower. There's too much, too many breadcrumbs. Porch guy is the biggest breadcrumb, but they have possible DNA that's connected. They're going to have that video that I think will surface. They didn't fly out of there via UFO saucer. They had to take a route. And we've traced these routes. For those of you who have watched this, I've traced them. Sooner or later, you've got to come out where there's traffic cameras. You've got to come out. So you need to be looking at that time frame. I think that might be what breaks this case. I really do. They're going to get caught. And yes, we need more. I would be searching even now. I would literally say, come, please come and search the desert. Want to put this back up? Fabulous. Oh, thank you. Fabulous for responding to my question. Thanks, Jen. In Canada. Yep. Medical assistance in dying. Heartbreaking for the person you know with ALS. Yes. It exists in many countries before people had to travel to countries. I want to ask you this. Has anybody, and thank you again, Christine. I want to ask you all this. Have any of you ever watched the movie? It's called, I think it's called Not About You, About Me. Probably saying that a little bit wrong. And it's the most, it's actually so heartbreaking. So don't watch it unless you want to get heartbroken. But one of the most cathartic, beautiful kind of love story movies, combined with, you know, what it's like, I think, for people to struggle with health issues and deal with that and decisions that are made. But anyway, if you're looking for a very perfect acting, amazing storyline, very, very well done, deep, truly intimate story, but that makes you really think, it's called, I think, It's Not About You, It's About Me. Or Not About Me, About You. Maybe that's it. It was the unselfish version, Not About Me, About You. I'm sure some of you will have possibly seen it. Please write that down. go watch that movie if that's the kind of movie you're looking for, a deep thinking movie. So back to a lot of this information that we're going to continue to see out is you're going to see basically a re-emphasis on what we already knew because there's no new news. And so you're going to see a re-emphasis on a lot of these points. You're going to see some of that here, you know, just re-emphasizing things we forgot. I try to every day, believe it or not, look at a Sheriff Nano's video and look at some of the information that was revealed and when it was revealed, just to stay up on the true facts of what happened in this case. And whether we believe him or not, I at least like to look back and say, what were they saying? So anyway, I want to move on now to, again, talking about Sheriff Nanos and will he or will he not be removed? We're going to find out, I think, pretty soon whether they're able to manipulate that. There were a couple things that Sheriff Nanos said in one of his videos that I thought was really interesting. And this was from, if you want to look it up, February 19th, 2026. So only about 3 weeks after the incident. But basically, he's from the very beginning under a lot of scrutiny. But one of the things he says, and I always try to think about this from a personal standpoint, and I think for everybody. So as you all are listening to these different people with their notions, is that armchair detectives criticize, but do they have all the facts and have they ever done the job, the work? Have they ever had a case like this? And I'm not talking about other kinds of work. I'm talking about this kind of work, violent crime, abduction, so on and so forth. Have they done that? So I just say that when you're considering, you know, who you're kind of, what you're gleaning, I always just say, take a look. And because some people are really, really interesting, I agree with you. But then when I listen to the meat of what they're saying, I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, they don't know the facts. So the best you can do with that, I think that will help in terms of your journey in trying to figure out what's happened on this case. Let's see. Let me make sure nothing else in my notes. I thought I had one more. Okay, couple more things. April 8th, Sheriff Nanos gives a statement. So very recently, wait a minute, can't be April 8th, sorry. Excuse me. March, he gives a statement and he specifically talks about there's 10,000 pieces of video evidence they're going over. Now, previous to that, he said millions. I think the bottom line is this, it's true. This is an ominous task when you are talking about looking over the breadth of video, but you're really confined to a certain circumference surrounding where this occurred. And the time. And when you do that, and if you can get that time, you know, map it, how long it would take somebody to drive from point A to point B, if you can really do that, I think that they could really narrow this, and I'm sure they are. And I'm sure, hopefully, they are taking the Ring cameras, Nest cameras, and business cameras, video cameras. I told you a school, I think they would have to go by on a possible route they took that was a circuitous route that would have video and concentrate on that. And then even once you get that, it's going to be grainy, a mess if they had their lights out. I don't know if you'll be able to see anything, but you know, the Bureau has great resources. And as Sheriff Nanos has said, we don't have those resources. We can't do any of that. They need the Bureau. And the Bureau needs other labs and other experts in the area of video restoration and video honing in on details. I guarantee, as I've said before, they have a better video of this than we have. This one's not bad, but I guarantee they have it better and probably in color that they've differentiated because they know the backpack. They know exactly what color it is. They know the jacket, exactly the color of the pants and the shoes, the mask, the holster, the belt. They can colorize that in a splash, and they already have that colorized. As far as his facial features, I still think they have a very much imprinted idea of what that is that they just haven't released. And I can think of no reason not to release it. I want to talk about the fact really quick to reiterate. This is definitely, I promise you, not a cold case. There's a big difference between a case not having direction in terms of who the perpetrator is, not being able to prove that if you have it, and a case being cold. A case being cold is when you have no leads, you have nothing to look at anymore. You literally are putting it up on a shelf. You put it up on a shelf and for someday to brush off again and look at it from that perspective later in life. That is not this. They are drinking from a fire hose. 50,000 leads was one of the last numbers I saw. They're drinking from a fire hose. And thank goodness they do have great programming to help figure out the more important from the lesser important. But, you know, there's very few FBI agents. I don't know the exact number this day, but when I was in, it was about 10,000. Fluctuated maybe a little below, maybe a little bit above. When our time, I think our greatest time ever has maybe, I mean, when we've had the most agents, it's maybe 14,000-15,000. I just talked to somebody yesterday. I'm trying to help a friend who's been fleeced of $1,100,000 about, who put their money in cryptocurrency, and then unfortunately, an attorney further scammed them, or a proposed attorney further scammed them by trying to help them get their money out and taking money. It's just a horrible situation. But anyway, I was making a call on that case. And I know a lot of people that have taken the buyout. They had a buyout. So the number of FBI agents and FBI personnel has gone. I mean, when you're thinking about retiring in a few years and they offer you a buyout and they give you your salary for sitting at home, it's not a bad deal. So I keep talking to more and more people that I had no idea were gone or gone. They took the buyout. So nevertheless, my point is there's only so many people that can work on the Nancy Guthrie case. My understanding is there's 24, and that doesn't mean that at the drop of a hat, if something big came in, all the resources necessary would come to bear. But I'm just saying on a daily basis, that's very few people for a lot of leads. I mean, sometimes you can only get one lead done a day, depending on how complicated it is. Sometimes you can't get any leads done. Just think of the cyber leads they have in this case. And obviously we know about the DNA. Could take weeks, months, years. And I get it. We've talked about it. The snips. And I am going to have that other gal on. I'm so excited to have her. And then we're also going to have on, let me finish with Guthrie. And then I want to point out a couple of new insights. I want to talk lastly about Savannah Guthrie came back on after she had left the show. We talked about it. She was on 90 Minutes. We don't know. It could be about a child. We always have hope that maybe, oh, it's the Nancy Guthrie break. But nevertheless, she left after only 90 minutes. And that could have been pre-planned. We don't know whether it was acute. We don't know whether it was like I said, pre-planned, because her child could have had a play. We just don't know. But the next day when she came on, she talked about, and I just have to ask you about being a bluebird. And this is the little outfit. And I got to tell you, I'm sure many of you were brownies. And some of you maybe did both. I don't even think they have bluebirds anymore. I did bluebirds. It wasn't, it definitely wasn't for me, but I remember when I saw this picture, I'm like, oh my God, that's me with my little bluebird outfit with the red, white, and blue. It was so cute. Again, I don't even know if they have brownies have lasted and will last forever because they're Girl Scouts, but bluebirds came in and tried to, in a sense, do a lot of the same things that brownies did. But they had, it was a definitely a different slant. I think I know I remember being in Girl Scouts and it was so strict. I had to, this is how I ended up getting out of brownies or Girl Scouts. I had to walk, I know, through the snow and blah, 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 but literally in Nebraska, probably a mile from my school. Back then it was safe to walk to where they had the brownie meeting. And I was forever late. And they're, you know, telling my mom, you know, she's always late. And I'm like, there's no physical way for me to get out of, you know, my second grade class and make it to this Girl Scout brownie meeting. And I just remember the bluebirds were at the school. So I'm like, oh, this is easy. I just go right in there. I totally digress, but I know some of you might have been bluebirds, some of you might have been brownies, but my point is on this is Savannah got a little choked up, but look where she's at. She's right on the stoop where everything happened. You know, that ivy, the flowers, the everything, it's hard when you lose somebody you're so close to, and she's going to continue to struggle. There's going to be triggering things, so I just wanted to touch on that because I'm trying to really, really keep up with, so you all have a one-stop shop for whatever, whether it has to do with Savannah, whether it has to do with Chef Nanos, whether it has to do with new information out, which there's not really new information out. There are some theories out, but most of those theories also have been discussed. But it's just, you know, what you're able to see, because it's such a smattering and it's in so many different places. So hopefully you can come here and we're your one-stop shop for what's being discussed in the ether regarding her case, so you can keep up with it. Let's see. Oh, I wanted to talk about, somebody that I'm really excited to have on. And I would really like to have it on. I don't know for sure what we're going to discuss. I wanted to discuss the horrible situation I talked about this yesterday with the killing of the young girl and her abductor in Texas got life, which is just going to be lethal injection. But I don't know. We're going to find a great case, but Pretty Lies and Alibis. I've always liked her. We've always had a good relationship. And I normally have law enforcement on the show, psychologists on the show, profilers on the show, homicide detectives, other FBI agents. That's always been my main guest but I thought, you know what? I really like her. She just hit 100,000 followers. And I have so much respect for people in this community that are legitimate, you know, just trying to get information out there. Creators with good hearts. I like how she really exposes herself too. She's a person that you can kind of really get to know as you follow her, because she's not afraid to be more transparent with her life. I like that in an honest way. And anyway, I reached out to her and she said, yeah, I'd like to come on. And I said, great, I'd love to have you on. And so if you have any suggestions as to a particular case you'd like us to discuss, let me know. Let me know. I would love to hear from y'all. Again, she's a creator, but a creator that has integrity and kindness. And I like that. So let me know. Everyone, I am so glad you guys could join us. I really appreciate it. And actually at noon, every Friday. I didn't know if you guys knew this, but at noon every Friday, oh gosh, I need to be writing this down. I just saw Jack and Lily. Yes, that would be a really good one for us to chat about. Nevertheless, I'm looking forward to having her on. I want to remind members that if you are a $3.99 or more member, you are going to be eligible on August 16th, or if the case is broken first, Nancy's case is broken first. I've got a little group of things that I'm going to send out to you just to say thank you for your loyalty and your commitment to the channel. Something special I can do that nobody else can do. And I look forward to doing that. I'll probably make it a yearly thing. So just to thank y'all. Let's see. I was going to mention that at 12 noon every Friday, I am on Hidden Killers. I have been on the Hidden Killers show podcast is mainly, but now he actually has a YouTube, and I will be on. I mean, I'm on every Friday from noon to one. I know today because he always sends out what we're going to discuss. He's so organized. He's wonderful. His name's Tony Bruschi. He's so funny. Listen, his filter is he doesn't have one, but that's why I like being on with him. And he just added a new host, and that new host is Robin Drake, who I love, from the FBI. We just, after the show's over, we're always like, I guess because we have that kinship and we were with the Bureau the approximate same time. So we're always on together. Today, though, it might be overload for you, but it's going to be about, it's all about Nancy. So we're not doing it on anything else. It's all about Nancy. So again, if you are closely following the Nancy case and you like to eat up everything there is to know and just, they will have different perspectives, different things that they will bring out than I brought out today, I'm sure. But I just wanted to let you know. But when I'm on with him, we do all sorts of cases. We do a lot on David and Celeste Rivas. But I tell you, it's a different vibe, I guess, because here I'm just talking to you all. There's a lot of banter. We make jokes. I mean, honestly, it's so tough to day in and day out read and discuss these cases for everybody, right? It's so tragic. Everything, when you really think about it, it's so tragic. So we definitely throw in some humanness, I think. So anyway, if you're not doing anything else, hope you can join us in about 15 minutes because we will be on and they start right on time. And anyway, everyone, I really, really appreciate each and every one of you, my mods, and to all of you who are loyal out there. Thank you for being with us on this Friday. We will be back again tomorrow. We don't take weekends off. I'll be continuing to scrub new information, even if it's not new in terms of facts. Sometimes there's just new stuff like we talked about today. Until next time, may justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all the missing.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.